class this morning? Well, you got to hear all the good elders. Now, I'm going to try to keep up with Jim because Jim is a professional teacher. I'm not. I'm going to move up this way. That way I'll be right over here, right next to. This morning, I want to ask that you help me out with comments. But the one thing I need is your help in hearing. My hearing is not really great. So if you're in the back and you whisper it, I will not hear you. Yeah, exactly. I need one of those. So please interrupt me with the comments or anything. Steve, I'm going to start with you. What country are you a citizen of? United States. Is there anyone here who is a citizen of more than one country? Who? Over there. Okay. Did you know you can be a citizen of more than one country? Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, Justina just became a citizen of the United States not long ago. And we're very proud of her for doing this. Well, Steve, I'm going to ask you. I'm going to pick on you this morning because you're close to me somewhat. Okay. Yes. My mic's not on? Is there some way I can move it up? I don't think so. I think you're controlling me, right? My outside voice. This is my outside voice. Is that any better? You got me better? Okay. All right. Can you hear me now? All right. All right, Steve, I want to ask you some questions. What do we remember on Anzac Day? What do we remember on Anzac Day? Do we remember the landing of the first fleet of the Sydney Cove? The arrival of the first free settlers from Great Britain? The landing of the Australian and New Zealand Army Corps at Gallipoli, Turkey. You remember those? All right, well, let's try another one then. Let's try another one. What are the colors of the Australian Aboriginal flag? Are they black, red, and yellow? Blue, white, and green? Green, white, and black? Okay. Well, how about this? What's the official symbol of Australia that identifies Commonwealth property? The National Anthem, Commonwealth Coat of Arms, Australia's National Flower. Well, Steve, why don't you know these? Oh, you're not an Australian citizen. Does that make a difference? Certainly, certainly. All right, we are, most of us, I believe, are citizens of the United States, are we not? What are the advantages that we have of being a citizen of the United States? What's an advantage of being a citizen? Pardon me? Freedoms that go with it. What else? Protection? What's that? Pay for everybody else's free health care. What else? Anything else? All right. Well, I actually went, if you haven't looked at some of these, actually looked at what does it take to become a U.S. citizen. How many of you have ever looked at that website? Kind of interesting, isn't it? One of the things is you have a right to vote. Okay, how many of us vote? I hope all of us do. All right, this is the ability to elect leaders and an exclusive right for a U.S. citizen. Becoming one, a U.S. citizen gives you the right to vote in federal elections. So we need to get a voice in that, don't we? One of the other things that it said on the website was you're able to reunite your family in the United States. All right, let's say you came here from another country, you became a citizen. Now you can try to bring your family over here as a citizen. You can also obtain citizenship for children born abroad. For instance, my nephew was born in England. But when he became 18, he had to declare whether he was going to be a U.S. citizen or a citizen of England. Well, I think some of you may have seen him here a couple of weeks ago. He's a U.S. citizen. Just got out of the Army. All right? Gives you the ability to travel in and out of the U.S. freely. We have that ability to do that as a U.S. citizen. I know Patrick does that quite often. He's here and there and everywhere. And many others are also. Collect benefits. Dale, I think you were kind of on that. You collect benefits of being a U.S. citizen. Social Security, things of that nature, Medicare. You can become a federal employee. How many of you are federal employees in here? A couple of you? Okay. So you can become a federal employee. You can also become an elected official as being a U.S. citizen. Some of the things that they ask you, I just looked at what it takes to become a U.S. citizen. What's it? Some of the questions that they ask is a person applying for citizenship for 18 years old? That's the first question. This is sample questions, by the way. All right. Is the applicant a permanent resident? Is the applicant a U.S. national? Is the applicant a person of good moral character? Which of the above is true of the applicant? I'm female. I'm a male registered with the Selective Service. I'm a male who did not enter the United States under any status until my 26th birthday, and so on and so on. All right. Jim just finished up with the transformed life. Becoming a Christian. Transforming into the Christian life. There are three institutions that are ordained by God. The family, governments, and the church. The family came into being when God said that man was to leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, back in Genesis 2:24. The time when governments first appeared is a little more difficult to pinpoint. They evolved as people multiplied, as their needs and desires became more complicated. Governments can be evil. Do we have any evil? Well, governments that are not exactly fair on the earth today, we have some. We do, don't we? All right. But, you know, there isn't a way to get away from a government. You really can't get along without them, can you? Because of all the needs that we have in this country or any other country. For all the potential harm the governments can cause, God instructed Israel concerning the appointments of king in Deuteronomy 17:14-17. Can I have somebody read this for me real quick? Deuteronomy 17:14-20. Okay, what was bringing this about, Jim? They wanted to be a king. They wanted to be ruled by a king like other nations at that time, didn't they? I think it's very interesting, for instance, in verse 19 of this reading, But it says that he may learn to fear Jehovah his God and to keep all the words of this law and these statutes and do them. How many of our officials today do this? Are they looking to the Bible to guide them in their office today? I don't see a lot of that going on. I hope there's more than I know of. But I just don't see it at this time. Centuries later, Samuel warned the people of the risk of having a king, but he followed God's directions and anointed a king anyway. But you know, when governments fail these days, people suffer. Today, is it any different? Where do we hear about people suffering because the government just isn't taking care of them? Many places, aren't there? Gene, can I have you read our text today? It's coming from Romans 13, 1 through 10. Romans 13, 1 through 10. Thank you, Gene. Do we have a dual citizenship? Does everyone have that, Gene? No. Why? Oh, okay. Haven't accepted God's will. The same would be true if you went to a different country, let's say Australia. If you just get there, are you automatically a citizen? No. There are certain things that are required of you, aren't there? Just as there is in God's kingdom, there are certain things that are required for you to become a member of that kingdom. Philippians 3:20 tells us, for our citizenship is in heaven, and it's also we wait for a Savior, the Lord Christ Jesus. Thought I'd tell you just a little bit about Roman citizenship. How many of you are familiar with Roman citizenship? What sort of rights it brings to you? Are you? Good. A little bit. Well, you probably know all these then. Roman citizenship rights were first formulated in the Valerian Law at the founding of the Roman Republic of 509 B.C. But citizenship rights changed as Roman government changed. Becoming a Roman citizen could be gained in several ways. I thought this was kind of interesting. One of the ways was birth to Roman parents. That makes sense. Including birth to a Roman woman without regards to identity of the father. You could retire from the army and be a Roman citizen. Being freed from slavery, you could become a Roman citizen. And being given citizenship by a Roman general or emperor as an individual or as part of a political unit. Or what's one other way you could do it? Purchase. You could purchase your citizenship. How did Paul gain his citizenship? Do you know? Birth. He was born there, wasn't he? Sure he was. How about his family? We don't know exactly how the family gained their citizenship, but Paul was born there. What privileges does being a Roman citizen grant you? What did it do for Paul? You know? All right, you can't just be beaten and put in jail as a Roman citizen, could you? You could appeal to Caesar. Exactly. Some of the things, and we're going to hit on this in a few minutes, being a Roman citizen, also you were liable for property taxes and municipal taxes, just as we are today. Citizens had the right to vote in Rome, though there were different social classes and they had different rights at this point. A citizen became a member of a Roman tribe. A citizen was promised a fair trial without certain forms of harsh punishment. A citizen could not be executed without a trial and would not be crucified except by order of the emperor. A citizen could appeal to Caesar and had to be taken to Rome for trial. Do we see where Paul did this at times, where he pulled this out? Let's look at Acts 16, 35 through 40 real quick. A couple times he did this, didn't he? He was put in prison. And it reads, "But when it was day, the magistrate sent the sergeant, saying, 'Let those men go.' And the jailer reported the words of Paul, saying, 'The magistrates have let you go. Now therefore come and go in peace.' But Paul said unto them, 'They have beaten us publicly, uncondemned, men that are Romans, and have cast us into prison. And do they now cast us out privately? Nay, verily, let them come themselves and bring us out.' And the sergeants reported these words to the magistrates, and they feared when they heard that they were Romans. And they came and besought them. And when they had brought them out, they asked them to go away from the city. And when they went out of the prison and entered into the house of Lydia, and when they had seen the brethren, they comforted them and departed." There was also another instance in Acts 22:24-30, and that reads, "The chief captain commanded them to be brought into the castle, bidding that they should be examined by scourging, that he might know for what cause they so shouted against him. And when they had tied him up with the thongs, Paul said unto the centurion that stood by, 'Is it lawful for you to scourge a man that is a Roman and uncondemned?' And when the centurion heard it, he went into the chief captain and told him, saying, 'What art thou about to do? For this is a Roman.' And the chief captain came and said unto him, 'Tell me, art thou a Roman?' And he said, 'Yea.' And the chief captain answered, 'With a great sum I obtained my citizenship.'" This is the point where he paid to be a citizen. What was Paul's response? Paul said, "But I am a Roman-born citizen." "Then they that were about to examine him straightway departed from him. And the chief captain also was afraid, because he knew he was a Roman, and because he had bound him. But on the morrow, desiring to know the certainty thereof, he was accused of the Jews. They loosed him and commanded the chief priests and all the council to come together and brought Paul down to set him before him." So these were a couple instances where Paul was being bound. They didn't know he was a Roman citizen. That made a big difference at that time, didn't it? Just like it would with us. If we were in another country and they found, I won't say this goes worldwide anymore, but they found that we were a U.S. citizen, we have certain rights in other countries, don't we? Because we are a U.S. citizen. Our country has negotiated these rights with other countries so that we can freely come and go in other countries as well. All right, as we said earlier, a Roman citizen could make an appeal to Caesar, and that's shown in Acts 26 and 32, and where Agrippa said to Festus, "You know, this man has been born, set at liberty if he not appealed unto Caesar." All right, one of the questions I need to ask this morning, how we did treat our rulers, the president, those in power, how we did treat them? With respect, Just no respect? What? With respect, aren't we? Let's go back to Exodus 22:28 real quick. What does God say about this? Exodus 22:28 reads, "Thou shalt not revile God, nor curse a ruler of thy people." Simple as that. What else are we supposed to do for our rulers? Pray for them. Where do you see that? Ezra 6:10, right? Ezra 6:10 said that we may offer sacrifices of a sweet savor unto God of heaven and pray for the life of the king and his sons. What happens to those who won't obey the law of the land? Patrick, what would happen to somebody who does not obey the laws of this land? You pay consequences, don't you? I'll give you a little story. Most of you know that I work in Johnson County, and I work in Smithfield. Well, I deal with the school system, so sometimes I have to visit schools every great now and then. Well, I was on my way to Clayton High School, and went down the road, and I saw there was a highway patrolman had a car pulled over, and I had my cruise control set, and I was just, you know, no big deal. And all of a sudden, he pulls me over. And he said, "Do you know why I'm pulling you over?" I said, "I have no idea." He said, "There's a move-over law here." I said, "A what?" He says, "A move-over law." I said, "I never heard of it." "Well, it's on billboards and on the news." I said, "I don't get home in time to see the news, and I haven't seen it on a billboard." Okay. So he writes me a ticket. This ticket would cost $400. I went to court over that because I was just like, no, that's kind of, to me, that's not quite right. If I don't know that there's a law on the books that directly affects what you do when you pass a highway patrolman, you know, I think more than the news and the billboard would warrant somebody to know about this law. So anyway, I go to the court, talk to the people, and she said, "The officer said that you were not aware of this." I said, "No, I wasn't." "Are you aware of it now?" I said, "Yes, ma'am." "Court calls, out of here." "Okay, bye." You know, was that fair to me? That's the way it works. Because she said, "How do you plead?" I said, "Well, I'm guilty. I did not know that law was here." That didn't seem really fair to me, but I still have to go by the laws of the land, don't I? Just like all of us do. Did I have any bad feelings about that? Well, I was out $100, yeah. But besides that, it was better than $400. And now when there's a policeman over there, I get over there and get out of their way. The bad thing was there was nobody even out of the car. That's what really kind of irritated me. There was nobody out of the car. So I was no threat, but whatever. All right. So what happens to us? You say you suffer the consequences, such as I did. Ezra 7:26 reads, "And whoever will not do the law of thy God and the law of the king, let judgment be executed upon them with all diligence, whether it be unto death or to banishment or to confiscation of goods or to imprisonment." What did Paul say about the ruler of the people? Let's read a little bit about that. Let's bring it back up into the New Testament times. Romans 13:1-7, we had read that already. And it says, "Let every soul be in subjection to higher powers. For there is no power but of God, and the powers that are ordained of God. Therefore he that resisteth the power withstandeth the ordinances of God, and they that withstand shall receive to themselves judgment." So if we do not obey the laws of the land, we're not obeying God, are we? Luther? Right. Right. Lulu brings out a good point. If you couldn't hear, she's saying, you know, it's like the loss of the land. If we don't get the word to them, they don't know. Are they going to be lost come judgment day? Yes, they are. So we need to get that word to them. All right. What else did Paul say about our rulers? 1 Timothy 2, 1 and 2 reads, I exhort, therefore, first of all, that supplications, prayers, intercessions, thanksgiving be made for all men, for kings and all that are in high place, that we may lead a tranquil and quiet life in all godliness and gravity. And also in Titus 3:1, put them in mind to be in subjection to rulers, to authorities, to be obedient, to be ready under every good work. And we can also read 1 Peter 2:13 through 17, the same scenario there. You know, in the United States, we can criticize our president, can't we? We can criticize him. We have that right as a citizen. But as a Christian, we are to obey our rulers. That's the bottom line. There is no getting around that, is there? We may not always like what they do, what they say, how they act, but they're still our rulers, and they're put under power by God. We all need to get involved with our government because what is decided there directly affects Christians. We have to show our opposition to rulings that they are about to bring upon us, things that are opposed to God's law, and if we don't, we will be under subjection to them. All right. That's the first part of our lesson. The next part is just as great, I think. Taxes. Under most certain circumstances, we approve where we spend our money, don't we? Like Nathan and Jeannie, they have their money and they work together and say, all right, we're going to do this and this and this, right? What about your taxes? Are you directly in part of where your taxes go? No? Right. We are indirectly affected by where our taxes go, aren't we? Jesus made that, you know, paying taxes, those paying taxes are not being held accountable for how the government spends money. I mean, we cannot be affected, you know, we cannot be held accountable for how our representatives spend our money. We should be more in control of what is going on, but, you know, we cannot be held accountable for that. Those men will be, just as we will be held accountable for how we spend our money. We'll suffer the consequences. For instance, where do our taxes go? Give me a couple of ideas of where our taxes go today. Forrest, where some of our taxes go? Military, our protection. Okay? What else? Infrastructure, roads, all right? Things that make our lives a little better, nice, smooth roads. What else? Pardon me? That could be. There's probably a lot of things that go nowhere that we fund. What else? Public schools, food. What's that? Welfare. Okay. What are some things that we may not agree of where our taxes go? What are some things that we may be paying for that we just really are not great on where they go? Abortion. Our taxes go. Planned Parenthood. What's that, Dale? I can't hear you. Passing out condoms in high school students. Things such as this, is this something that we would approve of? No. But yet, that's where our tax money goes. All right, Matthew 22, 17 through 21 tells us what? Jesus was talking to the Pharisees at this time, wasn't he? Let's read this. Nathan, would you read this for us? 17 through 21 of Matthew 22.
Tell us then, what do you think? Is it lawful to give a poll tax to Caesar or not? But Jesus perceived their malice and said, Why are you testing me, you hypocrites? Show me the coin used for the poll tax. And they brought him a denarius. And he said to them, Whose likeness and inscription is this? And they said to him, Caesar's. Then he said to them, Then render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. Hearing this, they were amazed, and leaving him, they went away.
Okay. So what's Jesus saying at this point? Pardon me?
Pay it to who is due.
Exactly. There are taxes that we pay, right? That our government requires of us. But then there are things that God requires of us also that we have to do. Let's look at a little history of taxes for a minute. How many of you know about how taxes came up into play? Have you ever looked at that? How long have taxes been around? Nathan, do you have any idea how long taxes have been around? Before that, there was a compulsory fee or financial contribution for the management of government. Taxes could have been started with the custom of giving presents from the protection from harm. And we can see that in Genesis 32, a long time ago. All right, when Joseph revealed to Pharaoh in Egypt that there would be 7 years of famine, another 7 years of abundance, Pharaoh put him in charge of raising revenues, taxes. During that time of famine as well as plenty, he collected a 20% tax to store up food and then buy land for Pharaoh. So taxes have been around for quite a while. Let's see, where else? With the Romans under Pompey, they captured Jerusalem in 63 B.C., a talent of 10,000 talents was temporarily imposed on the Jews. How much was a talent? How much was a talent? Anybody recall? A talent was the heaviest weight, the heaviest unit of weight in the Hebrew system. The talent was used to weigh gold, silver, iron, and bronze, and many other commodities. A common talent weighed about 3,000 shekels, which doesn't tell you a whole lot, or the full weight that a man could carry. That's a lot of weight. Depending on some of us, it may not be as much. In Revelation 16:21, it talks about giant heavenly hailstones is described as heavy as a talent. So it says the weight that a man can carry. Yes. They were required to pay 10,000 talents. I would say it would be. That's a pretty heavy tax there. Yeah, pretty much. All right, I thought this was kind of interesting here. The tax, there was a tax contracting system going on at that time. Tax privileges were farmed out to highest bidders. From the various provinces, people would come to Alexandria to bid for the privilege of collecting taxes from their own people. The bidder who won the contract would tax the people up to double the amount required by law in order to make a handsome profit. Henceforth, tax collectors were not looked upon very highly at that time. The contracted tax collectors were given military assistance to help them enforce their demands. So you paid the tax, or you had somebody in your face. All right. Well, let me ask you this. During Jesus' times, well, I'll just make this statement. During Jesus' time, the Jews were probably paying from 30 to 40% of the income on taxes and religious dues. 30 to 40%. What's that compared to today? Pretty much the same, isn't it? If you look at your check, how much taxes are taken out? About a third, wouldn't you say? Not a whole lot has changed, has it? Okay. Talked about a poll tax in Exodus 30:11 through 16. Jehovah And Jehovah spoke unto Moses, saying, When thou takest the sum of the children of Israel, according to those who are numbered with them, then shalt give to every man a ransom for his soul unto Jehovah, when thou numberest them, and there be no play among them whom thou numberest them. This they shall give, every one that passeth over unto them that are numbered, half a shekel, after the shekel of the sanctuary. The shekel is 20 gerahs, half a shekel for an offering to Joseph. Every one that passeth over them are numbered, from 20 years old and upward shall give the offering to Jehovah. The rich shall not give more, the poor shall not give less than the half shekel, when they give the offering to Jehovah to make atonement for your souls. And thou shalt take the atonement money from the children of Israel, and shall appoint it for the service of the tent meeting, that it may be a memorial for the children of Israel before Jehovah to make atonement of your souls. How much was a shekel? A shekel was really a unit of weight. It was a 4/10 of an ounce of whatever they were weighing, whether it be gold, silver, whatever. Not a whole lot. And also we see in Nehemiah 10:32, where it reads, Also we made ordinances for us to charge ourselves yearly with a third part of a shekel for the service of the house of our Lord. And then we go into Luke 2:1. Now it came to pass in those days when there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be enrolled. Did Jesus ever pay a tax? Did he ever pay taxes? Did we read of that? I think this is kind of neat. John, you're a fisherman. I don't see Stephen here, but I know you fish quite often, don't you? Let's look at Matthew 17:24-27. Matthew 17:24-27. Jeff, could I get you to read that for me? 24-27, Matthew 17. Have you ever found a fish with money in his mouth? Just like money. Yeah. So Jesus did pay the tax, didn't he? Opened the mouth of a fish, and there was the money. That would be nice to be able to do that today, wouldn't it? I think we'd all be fishing more often if that were the case. All right. There was also a land tax. We go back to Genesis 41:34. It talks about, Let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint overseers over the land. Take up a fifth part of the land of Egypt into the seven plenteous years. All right. So comparing the taxes of the Bible to what we have today, pretty close, isn't it, to some degree? You know, you take about a third to a fourth of what they paid then, that's pretty much what we're paying today. Not a whole lot has changed except where it goes probably. All right, the last part of our lesson, and I don't have a lot of time left, what's the last part of our reading, Romans 13:8-10. And let's read this again, Romans 13:8-10. It says, Owe no man anything save to love one another, For he that loveth his neighbor hath fulfilled the law. For this thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not covet, and if there be any other commandment, it is summed up in this word, namely, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Love worketh no ill to his neighbor. Love, therefore, is a fulfillment of the law. So up till now, Paul's talking about being a citizen, what your responsibilities are, what you need to do, taxes, how we are to pay taxes. And now the last thing he goes over, and there was, he reminds us that the Christian's responsibility toward his neighbor. This is also discussed in Romans 12, 9 through 21, where it talks about let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil, cleave to that which is good. In love of the brethren, be tenderly affectionate one to another, in honor preferring one another, in diligence, not slothful, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing steadfastly in prayer, communication to the necessity of the saints, given in hospitality. Bless them that persecute you. Bless and curse not. Rejoice with them that rejoice, weep with them that weep. Be of the same mind one toward another. Set not your mind on high things, but condescend to things that are lowly. Be not wise in your own conceits. Render to no man evil for evil. Take thought for things honorable in the sight of all men. If it be possible, so much as you lie, be at peace with all men. Avenge not yourselves, beloved, but give place unto the wrath of God, for it is written, vengeance belongeth to me, I will recompense, saith the Lord. But if thy enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in doing so, thou shalt heap coals of fire upon his head. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. To the government, you do what is due, do you not? But what do you do for your neighbor? You love them. That's not something that's forced upon you, is it? You don't have to love your neighbor. But God does require that, doesn't he? It's not something that our government requires you to do. You can live next to somebody and never talk to them the whole time you're there. Can't you? But is that what God wants you to do? As Lulu said earlier, if we don't tell people about God on the day of judgment, they won't know what's required of them. The Christians obey the laws of the land, and the only exception would be in his allegiance to God. Acts 5:29 reads, but Peter and the apostles answered and said, we must obey God rather than men. Hello. Right. Love is an action word, isn't it? If you say you love someone and never show them that, Jim? Exactly. That's exactly right. Well, I think the second bell has already run, I do believe. Can you hear it? Because I can't hear it. No? Okay, maybe not. Good. You have 20 seconds, maybe. Some of the examples that we see in the Bible talks about Christian responsibilities to the government. Is can a Christian be a part of the government? Can it? Certainly. Do we have anything in the Bible that shows where Christians were part of the government? Matthew was a tax collector, was he not? What about the Philippian jailer? Wasn't he not baptized? Did he quit his job after that? No, he didn't. So we have many things to tell us that we are still to be a part of the government so that we can help form how our country is going. Well, thank you for your attention. And Jim will be teaching next week. I'll be out of town, but I'll pick up the following week after that. Thank you.